they were saying, the best Marvel film since Endgame, and I disagree with that. Hello and welcome back to the Daily With You podcast. I'm your host, Bradley, and we'll be discussing some of the latest movies and TV news and all that jazz. So if that sounds good to you, then consider subscribing. So today, we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So at the time of recording this, today is actually Star Wars Day. It's Thursday, the May the 4th. So May the 4th to you on this belated Star Wars Day weekend. Hey, maybe you're celebrating today instead. That's cool. And I did actually watch some Star Wars. I watched some episodes of Star Wars The Clone Wars earlier this morning. I think that was like the first thing I did actually today. So yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 came out in the UK yesterday. I went to see it with Jake last night. And I was going to be sharing my thoughts, what I think. And yes, it's going to be spoilers. So if you haven't seen the film yet and you don't want to know anything, then I recommend you don't tune into this episode. If you've seen it, let me know what you agree. Do you disagree with anything I'm going to say? That sort of thing. Or sometimes, you know, usually I like to know a bit about a film before I go to see it. And, you know, maybe you're the same, so that's why you're tuning in. But actually, I like to do my little check-ins on Facebook when I go watch a film. I don't do it anywhere else, but only when I'm watching a film. So, you know, I put the status up, and it was the first time in years that I've seen a Marvel movie without knowing half the plot. And it's true. I usually know stuff. Sometimes I go looking for it. Sometimes you come across it accidentally or on social media or anything like that. But for this film, I think I had seen the trailers maybe once, and that was it. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't even know how long this film was, but so I kind of went in blind, and it was nice. The film wasn't what I expected, but I don't know what I expected. After I've shared my thoughts on the film, I'm going to talk about my cinema experience, because it was probably the worst cinema experience I've ever had, but we'll save that for after the review. Let's get through the fun stuff first. Yeah, I wrote the review this morning for the podcast. I normally film these podcasts on a Monday morning. Today is Thursday evening almost, and the episode's coming out Saturday the, what was it, 6th of, yeah, Saturday the 6th, which is also the same day as King Charles III's coronation, so if we don't get any views, that's why. God, I like to go off on a tangent, don't I? I don't normally write film reviews, but I did for this one, because I wanted to come into this episode with some more notes than just sitting here kind of going off the top of my head. I wanted to get everything out. And I wrote a lot of stuff, much more than I expected. I was like thinking bullet point notes, and it also turned into paragraphs. It's about a page and a half, so who knows how long it's going to take me to read, but let's not waste any more time and get into my little review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Firstly, it gets straight into the action, which is something I guess I don't do on this podcast, but if you're going to see that film, like, it just, wow, you're into it. And I didn't expect that, because usually there's a bit of setup, but no, straight in, big action scene, Adam Warlock, destruction, Guardians, you know, all sorts of chaos is going on. But then if you've seen the film, you already know that. If you haven't seen the film, hopefully you've understood that there's spoilers in this podcast episode by now. But yeah, it gets straight into it, you know, it really grips you with the storytelling and action pieces, which is a really good thing, especially for a casual audience goer, I suppose, that you don't want to sit there waiting half an hour for something to happen. Like, this gets straight into it, and that's a really good thing. I mean, some people might think it was a little too random, and I almost thought that, I was like, wait, what's going on? But I suppose it worked to its advantage, because, you know, it did pay off, and the whole film really does rely on the action that happened within those first 5 minutes. Like, and I didn't expect that. I thought, okay, yeah, they're going to resolve this little conflict, but no, it really pushes the whole film forward, which I suppose is the purpose. And the film uses its runtime pretty well. Again, we start off with the payoff from the second movie with the introduction of Adam Warlock, although his introduction and his purpose felt kind of forced. It's like they had this payoff, well, they had this tease and they needed to pay it off, and their plans changed, so it's slightly different. But they've kind of changed what their purpose, and they revealed that the Sovereign were created by the High Evolutionary, who is the villain of this film, and that Aisha and Adam Warlock, who are the Sovereign, she's the High Priestess, and he's technically her son. So they're now working for the High Evolutionary to capture Rocket for, you know, purposes. You know, I feel like I've forgotten that key plot point already, and I only saw it last night. I mean, I haven't seen the second film in a while, but I don't remember there being any tease or references to them working for somebody else. They seemed pretty self-reliant to me. So when they introduced them in, it felt a bit forced. And they were the only two Sovereign in it. There was no, like, army from the second film or anything like that. It was just them two kind of working solo for the High Evolutionary. So that was interesting. But Will Poulter gives Adam Warlock a naive and humorous kind of personality. And it is said that the High Evolutionary woke him up from his cocoon too early, which is kind of cool. So he's kind of like young and he doesn't really know anything, and he's kind of learning as he goes, but he's also got that very quick, violent temper to him. He knows he's got this strength and power, but he doesn't like to use it, or he doesn't realize how far he goes. Like, yeah, there was this scene where they capture a Ravager and they try and extract information for him. And then Aisha's like, oh yeah, show him what we can do. And then Adam Warlock completely disintegrates the guy. And then he's like, well, we can't get anything from him now. He's dead. And he's like, oh, I didn't realize. Sorry. But yeah, as I said, the whole movie really does kind of rely and happen because of the first action pieces and that first few scenes. I mean, it doesn't really rely on other MCU movies. Like, of course, there are references to, like, Infinity War with Gamora and Thanos and things. But that's pretty much it. You don't need to have seen Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania to understand what's going on in here, which is good. You know, you don't need to see Doctor Strange. You just need to see the Guardians films. That's pretty much it, which I suppose is, you know, the purpose and the whole point, because it's the end of the trilogy and everything, and they're all focusing on this, but it really worked. It was nice that it wasn't really connected to the wider MCU in a way. There were no teasers of Kang that I picked up on, so that was good as well. Not only does it not rely on other MCU movies, it doesn't really set up other things either. So like I said, there's no mention of Kang, no other threats, nothing multiverse related. It was all kind of in its own little bubble. But of course, it does leave doors open for certain characters, and by the ending, you know, they're all kind of disband almost and go their separate ways. But again, if you've seen the film, you know that, right? That's weird. I feel like I'm talking to you, telling you what happened, but then I'm assuming you already know what happened. And if you don't know, then hopefully you want to know. That's the difficult thing about doing a spoiler film review, isn't it, really? I had the same trouble with the Mario movie. I talked about that one here. Huh. One thing that I was expecting going into this film was a character to die. Because all the cast talked about how this is their last MCU film, it's their last Guardians role, James Garnier, it's done. You know, characters are going to die. Well, they didn't say that, but they made us feel that way, and I think the marketing did that as well. No, none of the characters died, you'd be pleased to know, or maybe you'd be disappointed. But there were definitely moments where you're thinking, oh my god, this is it. They're going to die now. Is this it? And you think that with Rock, well, I think all of the characters have their moments of where that's going to happen. Like, for example, Rocket, obviously, where he's dying throughout the film anyway, and then when he goes to this otherworldly realm where he meets his deceased friends, and then he's like, oh god, is he going to go? You know, he's walking into the light. Or when Nebula is trying to save the ship, she, like, you know, puts herself into it to control it. Oh yeah, she's not getting out of here. The ship is exploding around her. She's going to die. Or when Mantis and Drax are on the outside of the ship going into space and they're freezing up. Oh god, Mantis is going to die now. Drax, I think he got shot like twice at least in that film. Like, oh my god, is this it? He's dead now. And then Peter at the end, like, oh my god, he got trapped by the debris. He started to freeze up. He's dead. But no, Adam Warlock saved him in the end. And then they all survived. I think the one that really got me thinking, oh my god, they are going to die now, was Peter. Like, you do kind of think it with the others, but his scene, like, it was so last second that if it was any other movie or any other time, the character would have and should have died. Like, he was in space, he didn't have his helmet to help him or his rocket boots, he was just there, and he started to freeze up. It happened to Yondu, why didn't it happen to Peter, you know? And then his face started to swell up as well, but he survived that. And I really thought, oh my god, this is it. And the music and everything and the scene and all the characters are, like, trapped, they can't help him. And but then it's that heroic save the day. Adam Warlock is a good guy now. He saved our main hero. And that's good because, well, as I said, they all went their separate ways and Peter returned to Earth to be with his granddad. Yeah, he's back on Earth. Will he join the Avengers? I hope so. I don't expect to see him again before Avengers Kang Dynasty, or any of these characters, really. And then Drax and Nebula kind of raise all these children and animals that they saved from the High Evolutionary. They raise them on Nowhere. Mantis says she wants to go her own way, although she's still on Nowhere. She's just not in the same city portion that Drax and Nebula are in. Obviously, they all retire from the Guardians. Gamora doesn't join them. She sticks with the Ravagers, and that's fine. She seems to be enjoying that. She's a different person than she was, or than she would have been if she hadn't have died, than the time travel. And it's referenced that how everyone else from the 2014 timeline back in Endgame was, like, killed, but she was the only one who wasn't. They didn't explain why. They even made the joke about it. Like, oh, I don't understand Infinity War science. I don't understand Infinity Stones. You know, I'm not an expert on that. So it's a fun thing. They don't need to explain it. They just made that throwaway line. And then Peter makes Rocket the captain of the Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, he's been through a lot. I think even in Infinity War and Endgame, he wasn't snapped. He was still there, and now he's the leader. Obviously, Groot is still sticking with him. Kraglin as well, who also kind of joined in the second film. And then they got Cosmo, the dog. And then, of course, Adam Warlock joined as well. And one of the kids who they saved from the High Evolutionary, apparently she's got powers that she didn't use earlier in the film, I don't think. But now she's part of the team, so I guess she's going to be a leading role. Marvel haven't talked about any future Guardians films, but I'd expect them to do so. But we're not going to see these characters again before like the next Avengers film or before the next Guardians film, I don't think. But it's nice to know that the team might be different, but they're still out there. But then, you know, once you got to the end of the film, and after the post-credits scenes, you know, it usually has a little tagline like, "The Guardians of the Galaxy will return." But it didn't have that for this one. All it said was, in a slightly different style of title card almost, it said, "The legendary Star-Lord will return." So, is that going to be the title of a Disney Plus spin-off special or show or a film? The legendary Star-Lord? It's because it felt like a title card. It wasn't the basic black screen, white font. It was a big thing, really in your face, really obvious. And it's good. I'm just happy he's on Earth. I'm like, yes, please join the Avengers. Because, yeah, why not? The Avengers need new members. So he should join them. But he's very much having their quiet life now, until of course there's another end of the world threat where he has no choice but to get involved, or his granddad will die or something, and that will fuel him to get back in the team. But yeah, so I expect that. But it was surprising to see that despite setting up a new team of Guardians, they're not teased. I guess they don't need to be, but it was just a little surprise. And although pretty much all the characters have got a happy ending in this film, when we see them again, I feel like certain stories for characters have wrapped up now, like Nebula and Drax, for example. They both got a happy ending in this film, but I don't really see them going further, other than being roped back in for the action again. I feel like if they're going to come back, they need to be brought back to be killed off. Mainly those two, just because they would have done the happy ending, they would have raised all these children, they've created a legacy that their purpose is done now, and they should go out with some sacrifice or something. I think that would be what I would do. But yeah, I could go on and on about this film, and it wasn't what I expected, but I still enjoyed it. You know, James Gunn, obviously written and directed by him, absolutely knocked out of the park. It was just good. Like, a lot of MCU films haven't been good since Endgame because they set the bar so high, and in the marketing, they were saying the best Marvel film since Endgame, and I disagree with that. I don't think it was. I think Spider-Man No Way Home is still the better film since Endgame, but it was up there, you know? Better than all the other Phase 4 films, better than Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, probably better than Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. I feel like I need to rewatch it. Jake said he rewatched it and enjoyed it more on a second viewing, so I do need to do that. But I think Shang-Chi was also a very strong film, but definitely better than Black Widow, definitely better than Black Panther Wakanda Forever, definitely better than Thor Love and Thunder, definitely better than The Eternals. I haven't even seen it, but I just know it is. So it is very good. And of course, a big part of making a film good is the cast and how they play their roles. And, you know, you got to give shout outs to all of them because they really did a good job in this film. Especially somebody who I didn't know was going to be in this film, Linda Cardellini, who you may know as Laura Barton in the Avengers films and the Hawkeye series, obviously Hawkeye's wife. But she also worked with James Gunn back on the Scooby-Doo live-action films way back, like 20 years ago, playing Velma. And she was the voice of Lila, the otter. I think she's an otter. I never thought a film would make me want to cry about a raccoon and an otter. Like, their story, the other characters are funny as well, a little comic relief in there, but those two, the connection they had, yeah. I didn't cry, but I was very close to doing so on a few occasions, and that was definitely one of them. And when they had their almost little reunion, she did an amazing job. Yeah, that was really good. But of course, it wouldn't be a James Gunn film if it wasn't filled with cameos. We got Nathan Fillion back as this kind of alien army commander dude. I mean, he's in a big kind of puffy suit, but his head is, you know, he looks like Nathan Fillion. He's normal. You recognize him straight away. Michael Rooker was back as Yondu for like 3 seconds for a little hallucination sequence for Kraglin, who inspires him to finally master his kind of arrow dart thingy, which he's been trying to do, but he finally managed to do that. Totally didn't expect it, but now looking back, I feel like I should have, because obviously he had a role in the holiday special. Of course he was going to have a role in this. You know, he's good friends with James Gunn. It just made sense to bring him back. I think that was a really good use of him. And then Judy Greer, who also played, was it Maggie Lang? Scott Lang's ex-wife in the first two Ant-Man films. She did a voice role for one of these alien cyborg war pig things. They look very creepy. but she had a small role in there, which I didn't know until after the film. I was like, okay, I saw the name in the credits. I was like, right, that makes sense, I guess. And then we had Sylvester Stallone reprising his role as a Ravager leader from the second film. Much small, well, he was a small role in that film, but also a smaller role in this film, more like a cameo, really. So that was pretty cool to see him. And then there was other kind of members of his little Ravagers team that was fun to see. Although Michelle Yeoh's character was not in this film, I don't think. If she was, I didn't see her. But I guess she's too busy winning Oscars to appear in a Guardians of the Galaxy film right now. Tara Strong replaces Miley Cyrus as the voice of Mainframe, the kind of floating little head robot thingy. As I said, was voiced by Miley Cyrus in a cameo role at the end of the second film, but now replaced by Tara Strong, who also voices Miss Minutes in the Loki series. So, loads of actors coming in doing multiple roles. But I guess if you're doing voice work, it doesn't really matter if you've already played somebody else. And then another actor who really surprised me, and I had absolutely no idea they were in this film until I saw their name in the opening credits, Nico Santos, who I know him for his role as Mateo in the Superstore TV series, which is one of my all-time favourites. I love it. But he played kind of the right-hand man of the High Evolutionary, and he did an amazing job. It was funny, it was menacing. You know, you almost want to feel sorry for him, but at the point where he's going to die, and his death is painful. Oh! But then, you know, he was a bad guy, ultimately. But I just feel like, I feel proud, and I hope that he gets more big roles, because he deserves them, and his performance in this was amazing. So that was a really fun surprise that I didn't expect, and I just really enjoyed it. But yeah, I could talk hours and hours about this film, and I've talked longer about it than I have expected to already. So yeah, I think I'll wrap it up there. But yeah, if you haven't seen it, definitely go and see it. It's well worth it. But if you're in the UK, go to an Odeon cinema to get this really cool Guardians of the Galaxy exclusive limited edition popcorn bucket. I think it's like £12 or whatever. I went to a View cinema and I didn't managed to get one because it's exclusive to Odeon, and my friend went to an Odeon cinema yesterday as well, and she got one. I was like, oh man, I really want that. Like, there is an Odeon cinema near me, but I've always been going to View. That's kind of my go-to. And then I looked on eBay, and these popcorn buckets are like 30 quid now. I was like, oh my god, I'm not paying that, but I do want one. I was like, I mean, I could go and see the film again, I guess. Get a popcorn bucket. Just for a popcorn bucket. I was one on eBay for like £15 in an auction bidding. So, okay, I'll pay a little bit over the odds. I'll do that because this is really cool and I want it. But no, that is flying up in value right now. Everyone wants that for some reason. That's crazy. If you have one and you don't want it, send it my way. I'd really appreciate that. But from talking about popcorn at cinema, let's talk about my cinema experience in general. Because, wow, it was an eventful, unpleasant, almost unbearable experience that I had last night. Let's start off on a positive tone. This was nice to go back to the cinema with Jake. This was probably the first time we've been to the cinema together in about a year, when we last saw Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. As I said, I went in pretty much completely blind. I didn't know anything about this film. I didn't even know how long it was going to be. I think it was just over 2.5 hours in the end or something like that. So I went in, got my snacks, got my little kind of little snack tray combo with a drink, a chocolate bar and some popcorn. Yep, all good. We went into the screen, I think it's either the biggest or one of the biggest screens at my local cinema, and I picked out the perfect seats. It was right in the middle. The screen is centered in front of you, not too far back, not too far down, and the cinema's got these lovely reclining chairs now. So I was like, oh, this is good. I like this. But then it happened. So me and Jake were the first people on our row, which is great. Even though you book your own seats, it's just nice to get there before anyone else. You'd have to kind of awkwardly climb over anyone's legs or anything. We took to our seats, and it was all good. Yeah, that's fine. And I had my little tray of snacks, and there was nobody else around us, so I just put them on the tray on my right, because I'm right-handed. It just made sense for me. And then this guy walked past and sat, well, I don't, almost jumped into the seat. That'd be underplaying if I said sitting down. Just like I wrote a review, wrote notes with the review of the film, I wrote notes, more like an essay, about my horrible experience with this guy. So, let me look at my notes here. I almost walked out of that cinema screening, not because of the film, but because of the person sitting next to me. So then this guy came along, he's probably like late 20s, early 30s, probably early 30s actually. I didn't really see much of him, it was a dark room, but that's what I thought. And, oh god. The first thing I noticed was the smell. Yeah, I'm not one to like shame people or anything like that. I don't think that's very fair. But when you're sitting in a room next to a stranger for multiple hours, like if I was here in the frame, you would be able to see them too. So I guess that's pretty close for comfort. But yeah, I'll try not to be too mean about it, but it was not pleasant at all. And I immediately knew that I'd have to put up with this for the next 2 and a bit hours. And I spent most of the film just kind of sitting like this, just kind of with my hand under my nose in hopes that I would just block it out. I didn't want to do, you know, I'm not going to be as obvious as that, but maybe I should have been. But then, you know, I don't think he was going to leave. So it was just kind of just awkwardly sitting over here, trying to get away from him. It was like body odor and damp clothing and, ooh, horrible. So before the film even began, he reclined his chair, and instead of laying back like a normal person in a recliner, he kind of turned it into a table. So he kind of sat cross-legged on the chair, got out a picnic from his backpack that he brought with him. I was like, oh no, crunchy foods. Yeah, they were crunchy. He was ripping them open, but okay. The film hasn't started yet, I can let that slide. That's fine, you know, you want to get your snacks ready, no problem. But of course he did it throughout the film. Not during the loud action pieces, during the quiet moments. And in this film, there were some almost dead silent moments. And he was, you know, ripping bags of crisps open or whatever. I was like, oh, for God's sake, really? So he was noisy, he was smelly, his food smelt, then he had, like, energy drinks. And energy drinks have a strong sweet smell anyway, you know that, right? So he had one of those open. I was like, oh my God. And every now and then there was this waft of mixture of horrible smells that was coming past. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't. And there were moments where I was actually thinking, if I wasn't with Jake watching this film, I would have either got up, pretend to go to the toilet, and then just moved seats somewhere else. Or I would have left and gone home and can't see the film another day. It was that bad. But it didn't end there, of course. Why would it? So he was kind of sitting cross-legged, and you know, these chairs are pretty big. I don't think he was a necessarily big guy, but he was just kind of really spreading himself out in the chair. And yeah, we have to share an armrest, so he was, his arms and his knees were up on it, and I was leaning closer to Jake on my left. And I was beginning to think, oh, Jake's probably gonna think I'm trying to snuggle up to him, but I'm just trying to get away from this other guy. So I'm like this. It was so bad. But yeah, that wasn't all of it, because, you know, this film is pretty funny. There are some funny moments, but I wouldn't say there are a bunch of laugh-out-loud moments, although this guy seemed to disagree. He was not laughing, cackling. The cinema was dead silent, and there was him out loud. And I was like, oh my God, shut up. But there was a moment where he thought he lost his phone in under the seat, and he was rustling around, panicking, like, oh my God. And I couldn't help but sit there, and I almost laughed at him. I was just so smug. I was like, oh, yeah, that's what you get. I was just here, just kind of smiling to myself, almost evil. But I felt like, yeah, good. You deserve that. Yeah, I think if I was experiencing as much discomfort as I was, obviously there was somebody else on the other side of him. Surely they felt the same way. Oh, and, you know, there's end credit scenes for these Marvel films. A lot of people left the cinema. He didn't. He was there to the very end, just like me and Jake were. I was like, oh my God. But as soon as he left, I said to Jake, I was like, that guy was awful. And Jake was like, yeah, I know. I felt like you were going to say something to him because he kept laughing all the time. And, oh God. I suppose I should mention, on the flip side of laughing, there are some sad moments too. And then also, he was absolutely sobbing his eyes out. Like, it's kind of curling up into a ball, crying away. I was like, it's not that sad. Yeah, I'm not usually one to complain about strangers like that, but this guy really bothered me. But yeah, I thought I'd share it on the internet with you, so hey, I hope this guy doesn't find out. Oh well, I don't care if he does. That's just my opinion. I could go on, but I think you get the impression that he was not pleasant to be around. Oh, and I nearly forgot. He took his shoes off, and then the smell just got worse. With his bright orange socks, and before he took them off, he was wearing Crocs. So if that doesn't top it all off, I don't know what will, but he was like the worst cinema goer you could create. It's like out of a TV show. It was that comically unfunny, bad and annoying that you think this guy cannot be for real. But I'm pretty sure he was. So yeah, the film was good, but the cinema experience was not. But yeah, I've said enough about that. Well, that pretty much covers the main bulk of the episode that I want to talk about, the film review and my bad experience. But before we do wrap it up, I just want to give a quick update on some Mario stuff from last episode, where I talked about I wanted to get a Nintendo Switch. And I bought one. I was feeling really spontaneous one day after work. I left work, went straight to the shop to buy one. And I got Mario Kart for it as well, because that's the only game that I've really wanted to play on it. So I got that. It's not quite as fun as I had hoped it would be. Like, for example, the character unlocks, which is one of the huge things I loved about Mario Kart on the Wii. You know, unlocking different characters and different courses. That's all already unlocked on the Switch version of Mario Kart 8. And I suppose because the game's technically like a remake of the version that was on the Wii U, so they didn't want people to have to replay the game to unlock everything, which I kind of understand. But to me, unlocking things is one of the best bits about Mario Kart. It's just fun. You don't know what's going to come next. Like, sure, you can unlock some kart customizations, and there is one variant of Mario that you can get, but that is pretty much it. So that's a bit annoying. But it's nice to play some of the old maps that I used to play on the Wii, see them remastered and from the other games as well. And they got DLC at the moment, bringing back more stuff. So it's pretty good. But I suppose I need to get some other games for my Nintendo Switch. So if you recommend any games for a Nintendo Switch, let me know in the comments and I'll maybe check them out. But before we go, as I said, this is the last episode of the podcast for a little while. I can't finish it without a story from the not yet titled news, and this one is perfect because it is a little bit related to Mario and Nintendo. So let's take a read. Nintendo forces Switch hacker to pay them 25-30% of his income for the rest of his life. So this guy was hacking Nintendo and now he's got to pay the price. A previously sentenced Nintendo Switch hacker now owes the company $14.5 million in damages, a sum which he'll likely be paying through his wages for the rest of his life. And get this right, the hacker's name. I don't know if it's his real name, but even if it isn't, it's still brilliant. His name is Gary Bowser. So he's the bad guy in this story and he's got Bowser in the name. So Gary Bowser was a member of a hacking group that was convicted for the creation and sale of devices that allowed users to illegally play pirated versions of copyrighted games. Bowser faced a sentence of 40 months in prison, a sentence that was viewed as a unique opportunity by Nintendo to send a message about their response to illegal activity. Since then, Bowser's sentence has been cut short as he was recently released and now awaits processing before re-entering society with an enormous debt. $14.5 million in debt? Ooh, I don't know where to start. It's reported that the most Nintendo can take from Bowser's monthly wages will be 25-30%, a hefty portion of his earnings which he'll be forced to pay for an incredibly long time. So at least he gets to pay it off in a little installment payment plan, although 25% of your monthly wages every month, that's a big chunk to account for. But I guess you shouldn't have been hacking in the first place. It's estimated Bowser would have to earn a total of 40 million before taxes to be able to pay off Nintendo. So he's got to earn 40 million before he can pay off 14.5. I don't know if I read the numbers wrong or that doesn't quite add up to me. So far, Bowser's paid off a total of $175 towards the damages. I don't know, had to win the lottery, I guess. Nintendo has always been incredibly protective of its intellectual property, often lashing out ferociously at those who were trying to circumvent their rules and pirate their games. Piracy in particular has always been something Nintendo strongly opposed, frequently shutting down sites or groups illegally sharing their content. They say that crime never pays, but in this instance, the crime has led to a very severe payout, and a vital warning to those who think they can avoid the watchful eye of Nintendo and its anti-piracy measures. Dun dun dun. No hacking Nintendo. They will find you, they will get you. Well, there we go, that was a fun news story. Yeah. I like that one. That pretty much wraps up this episode and this season of the podcast. So thank you very much for tuning in throughout all these episodes the last several weeks. It's been great to do it again. I hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly have. But yeah, I'm going to have a little break now, but don't worry. The Daily Weekly Show is back for a new season, season 8. In fact, we had an episode last week. We've got another one coming out on Monday. You don't want to miss it. And of course, always new content over on Daily Weekly Builds. So thank you very much. And I'll see you guys over on those channels and I'll see you back here sometime soon. Bye for now.